Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up? It's Fantasy Football's Most Valuable Podcast. This is your host, the self-anointed FFPC. I'm here with Corey and Patrick, and we just watched a hell of a Jets-Bills game. I tell you what, I tweeted earlier on the FFMVP account, and you should all follow us at FFMVP, that your buy low window on Brandon Marshall was going to close tonight. And he had an injury scare, so he didn't quite, have a matchup winning performance, didn't find the end zone, but broke 100 yards and I think is safe to call back to his old self. So let me ask you a hard-hitting question right off the bat, Patrick and Corey, try not to wet your pants. Who this weekend do you think the buy low window will close on? In other words, who should you try to trade for now instead of waiting for the breakouts this weekend? I'm going to start with Arian Foster, who he scored 10 points last week, but it was against a tough Seattle D. He got the rock quite a bit. I think he's going to continue to get the rock against the Patriots. The Patriots were a tough D against Arizona, but I think he ultimately is going to have a great game. And so if you're trying to get him and you think you can get him at a discount, your window's closing. I agree that Foster will be better and he'll be quite good. The only hesitation would be the injury risk. As long as he's starting, he'll be good. But around week six when he gets injured, you're going to feel like, well, crap, I traded an RB2 for this guy thinking he'd be a high-end RB2, and now he's on the injured reserve. Corey, what's your wrong take?
I'm inclined to agree on Arian Foster, my guy who I think the window is closing on and will be closed on after this weekend, is Russell Wilson. Going as the third or fourth quarterback in most standard drafts, he had a very slow start against the Miami Dolphins week one, but he didn't really need to be himself in that game, and he also was playing through a bit of an ankle injury. I think this weekend going against a Rams defense that made Blaine Gabbert look like Peyton Manning, we're going to see Russell Wilson return to his fantasy stud form, and you're not going to be able to get him at a bargain after this week.
So if you had, if you had Ben Roethlisberger, who had a good game, and someone offered you Russell Wilson for Ben Roethlisberger, would you take that deal?
I would take that in a heartbeat. And I would say, you, sir, are a fool.
What about if you had Brock Osweiler? Would you trade Brock? What about you, Brett? Would you value, where would you value Ben Roethlisberger or Phillip Rivers or Eli Manning vis-a-vis Russell Wilson at this point?
I would still have the same top five quarterback that we had in the preseason, which are Luck, Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, and Aaron Rodgers. After that, most draft boards had Palmer and Roethlisberger. I wasn't high on them. Palmer sort of disappointed. Roethlisberger was great. So I'd probably have Roethlisberger 6, but Eli Manning would be right behind him at 7. As we talked about on Tuesday night, I am quite worried about Phil Rivers. I think he was drafted as the 8th or 9th or 10th quarterback, and I agreed with that. But without Keenan Allen, I think he's more like the 12th or 13th most valuable quarterback. And I'm saying that as someone who owns him in two leagues. Well, my answer to the question of who else the buy low window is going to close on is Thomas Rawls. And we won't get into this because we've talked about it for 1,000 minutes so far. But all the coach speak so far has said that he's going to take back over the starting role this week. And against the LA Rams, who the Niners made look like a soft run matchup, I think there will be some goodness to be had for the Seahawks running backs. It's just a question of who's going to get those touches.
Well, speaking of the LA Rams, another guy who's a potential windows closing on a buy low candidate is Todd Gurley Man Gurley.
That's a steal.
It was highway robbery. What do you guys think about Gurley's very underwhelming performance against a Niners team that most folks were expecting to lose all 16 games this season?
You know, Patrick and I talked about it a little bit on Tuesday. Forget it. You weren't here. You missed it. You clearly don't listen. You only want to hear the sound of your own voice. I'm worried about Todd Gurley, too. I mean, in terms of trade offers, you know, Lamar Miller. I think I'd rather have Lamar Miller than Todd Gurley.
What about Brock Osweiler?
Brock Osweiler over everybody.
Well, Lamar, I hate to say it, Brad. I hate to be unnecessarily contrarian, but that was a Kevin-ish comment because Lamar Miller was highly touted coming into the season, not as highly touted as Gurley, and he delivered. And right now, in my mind, he's probably one of the top two fantasy running backs in the game, and he's delivered on that promise. So you, sir, are out of order.
This whole courtroom's out of order. Well, I mean, that's the question. After week one, how much do we adjust our draft boards? I don't think anyone had Lamar Miller above Todd Gurley a week ago today. So
True.
The question is, you know, Lamar Miller impressed, Todd Gurley didn't. Have they crossed paths in your rankings? And it sounds like we both think they do. Our disagreement is whether that's an extremely obvious observation or not.
Well, let's say, what about Forte? Forte versus Gurley. Forte was what, a fifth round pick?
Yeah.
And Todd Gurley was generally a first-round pick, maybe a beginning of the second-round pick. If you have Gurley, are you trading him for Forte, the guy who maybe tonight might get three touchdowns? I don't know.
Well, Forte is also coming off a game where he had over 150 all-purpose yards last week. He was one of my favorite buy-low candidates, which I thought was very strange that he seemed to be a lot of people's bust candidate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving the Forte train. I'm hoping it keeps up. A good buddy of mine texted me during the game that he loves Ryan Fitzpatrick running backs because Fitzpatrick is kind of the ultimate, you don't lose the game, you don't win the game until the fourth quarter type of quarterback. So the running back is always going to be involved, and they're also going to be involved in the passing game. So I think this is an ideal fit for Forte.
Okay, so you would keep Forte if someone offered you Gurley for him?
I probably would.
Okay, Brett, you're a Melvin Gordon owner. Someone offers you Todd Gurley for Melvin Gordon, somebody who had two touchdowns, but not a shitload of yards, would you take that deal?
I would definitely rather have Gurley than Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon did have a great game one. I actually think he's a sell high, not only because he scored twice, but because Keenan Allen's out, so you're thinking, oh, they're going to lean on the run more. However, I believe he had a 50-50 snap share with Danny Woodhead. So we may have just seen one of Melvin Gordon's best fantasy days of the year. And keep in mind, at least the first touchdown, if not both, were while Keenan was still on the field. So you might need that passing game threat to open it up for Gordon to have those easy goal line plunges. So I actually think Gordon is going to be better than where we drafted him. That's why I drafted him in a couple leagues. I thought he was undervalued, but he's also a good sell high at this point. To Corey's question about Todd Gurley or Matt Forte, that's bold. I can't fault you for that, Corey. I think it is slightly overreacting. I mean, I don't know. To the point about our draft boards that were just 5 days ago, you know, Gurley was a top two running back, and Forte's going in the fourth round. I mean, have they really crossed paths already after one game? But maybe I'm just being too slow to react, and they have.
Well, for me, it's a lot of movement on both sides. You know, I liked Forte heading into the season, and he's done nothing but deliver in two games. And both games were against pretty stout run defenses, not top tier, but, you know, these aren't gimme matchups. And so I think that Forte has solidified his role as an every week RB1. I think Gurley remains in the RB1 category, and you know, I know that I'm taking a bold position here, but given how slow Gurley looked, I think it is possible that he experiences a sophomore slump. The quarterback position, the fact that Case Keenum is still the starting quarterback and Jared Goff wasn't even suited up, makes me think that this offense is going to have a lot of growing pains this year.
Corey loves
this sports day. Romance in the air.
Well, let's get into tonight's game a little bit more. Matt Forte had three touchdowns. Good for him. Eric Decker, six catches for 126 yards and a touchdown. And Marshall with six catches for 100 yards. I don't think there's much analysis to do there. They're both going to be very good wide receivers. You didn't like seeing Quincy Anunua getting in there and getting just as many catches as them. But hopefully that corrects if you're a Decker or Marshall owner. And on the other side of the ball, LeSean McCoy had another slightly disappointing day, but sort of saved it with a couple big catches right at the very end, 59 yards on the ground and 31 yards through the air. Of course, Sammy Watkins was questionable coming in. He was active, only had two catches for 20 yards on five targets. Hopefully there's nowhere to go but up for him Do you guys have any takeaways whatsoever from this Jets-Bills game besides Corey's obvious man love for Matthew Forte?
I mean, Tyrod Taylor is still one of the more intriguing players in fantasy because of his tremendously high ceiling and tremendously low floor. He's just such a boom or bust, feast or famine sort of player. Our older brother Kevin was complaining about benching him, and he had a fantastic game tonight all across the board. I guess his rushing yards weren't fantastic. He's somebody that I think you pick up and you really just ride or die with. But if you are a team that has a player like Keenan Allen or somebody who's a tremendous bust, having somebody and rolling the dice to somebody like Tyrod Taylor might prove to benefit you down the road.
I mean, I have a question for you, Patrick. I think there was the 84-yard Goodwin touchdown and then the 70-plus-yard Salas touchdown. I understand that you're saying that Tyrod Taylor is a big boomer bust kind of candidate, but do you think that this type of game is a typical boom game for him? Or do you think that those two big plays should be kind of treated as outliers from his performance?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think today is particularly interesting because his boom games typically last year were games where he had like 180 passing yards and then 80 rushing yards, and that's where his value came from. But I do think that's a good point. But those touchdowns did come early, not in garbage time. So I think that could be something that we could see more of. He's got some deep threats, apparently, and he always did with Watkins. So I think tonight was a weird game. It was definitely a boom game, not the type we're used to seeing, but not the type that I think we won't see again. But I think he's the type of player that I would recommend somebody in a 14-person or 16-person league start, particularly if you have a big hole somewhere else, because I think he's got that high ceiling. And I think, you know, if you're a Keenan Allen owner in a 16- or 14-person league, you're already thinking about the need for those boomer bust players to be extra competitive.
The need for Sneed.
Oh, don't bring him up.
Well, why don't we get into some other news, headlines, notes, informational, factual pieces of information with the primary read.
This is the primary read.
One guy I mentioned earlier who I said I like as a buy low candidate is Russell Wilson. He did suffer a kind of scary ankle injury week one. Scary from the standpoint of he's a lot of folks as QB1, but he claims to be ready to roll against a Rams defense this week that looked patetico. And so, as I said, I think the window on him is closing. I think he returns to his QB1 form. I'm excited to see a little bit of redemption from my QB1 and with how crappy the Niners are still going to be, even despite their big week one blowout. I won't feel quite as guilty rooting for the Seahawks and Russell Wilson this week.
Sure. Do you really think that Russell Wilson – I mean, I have no doubt he'll do better this week, but do you really think it's possible, as many people are expecting, that he's going to just blow up the Rams? I mean, with the gimpy ankle, is there really a chance that he's back to 90% by this Sunday?
Well, I'm no doctor, but what is interesting is the Seahawks are only favored by 3 points, and the Rams have played the Seahawks really hard and almost stunned them a few times, but I mean, they were blown out 28-0 by the 49ers. How are they only supposed to lose by 3 points against the Rams? So, I mean, maybe the odds makers are thinking the Wilson injury is more serious than we do.
But if Russell Wilson says he's ready to roll, how could you ever doubt that?
My medical diagnosis, ready to roll.
Another guy who we here at FFMVP love, Zach Ertz, sat out practice on Thursday. It looks like he will not be active this week. He was kind of on a lot of folks' late round TE1 radar. He saw a lot of targets, hauled in a significant number of those targets week one. Carson Wentz did look pretty competent, but I don't think that Ertz has enough of a role in this offense to really be on the radar, particularly with Monday night's game. Zach Ertz owners need to have a backup option who they start. You can't wait for Monday night. I think this means more targets for Jordan Matthews, who looks to be a big benefactor of Wentz being a competent quarterback under center. Matthews I think, surprised a lot of people week one, and I think he earned his way into a lot of starting rosters heading into week two, which is where he belongs in a week two matchup against the Bears, who are going to be pretty weak against the pass.
I think Ertz got off to a good start and looked like maybe he could be, this is a cliche, but a safety blanket to a young quarterback. But with that injury, he might be out a couple weeks. We don't know yet. So unfortunately, he might even be droppable in 10-team leagues if he's going to miss three or four or more weeks.
Scary news for a guy who Patrick and I both own in several leagues. Paris Hilton's younger brother, T.Y. Hilton, mispracticed today with a knee issue. He was not just limited. He completely sat out, which is a little concerning, particularly when there was no word of any injury in the practice report from yesterday.
Maybe he has a broken heart.
He might. I think the Paris and Nicole feud has really gotten to him, and it's really tearing his family apart. I think we should be getting an update on Friday about T.Y.'s status, but all owners need to be mindful of the fact that they very well may be without their WR1 or 2 heading into this weekend.
Scary stuff.
Another guy that I know that Brett is going to be very sad to hear of this about, because he just made a big trade for him. Demaryius Thomas is worried about his hip heading into week two. He does not want to be getting hit moving out of cuts, which means he's going to certainly be playing at less than 100% and certainly be playing a little bit more cautiously than us greedy fantasy owners would like to see our players play with.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm on tonight. You know, my hips don't lie, and I'm quite worried about Demaryius Thomas's hip. It is very nerve-wracking when he's quoted as saying, I'm worried about getting hit. I mean, he's going to get a 20-yard catch and be like, okay, no one touched me. That's not how the NFL works. So you're right, I did just trade for him, and I'm going to have to bench him because, A, we don't know if he's going to play, and B, he's going to be at 50% maybe.
So he's someone who you could buy low, but you probably could buy lower after this weekend.
Yeah, maybe. Or you can buy low now if someone is thinking that he's not even going to play, and you're just going to have to maybe sit on him for a week, maybe even two.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we saw Matt Stafford just scorch the Colts secondary, so this is a very soft matchup for Demaryius. I think a lot of owners would like to have him ready to lock up this weekend. Do you think that this is going to help Emmanuel Sanders from the standpoint of he's going to likely be seeing an uptick in targets, or hurt him because it's going to make it pretty easy to double cover him as the focal point of this passing game?
Well, predictable question as always, Corey. I thank you for asking me. I think it'll help Sanders. It's actually a good question. I hate to roll back on my sarcasm, but it's a good question. And in this case, the Colts cornerbacks, I think, are so weak that even if they try to double cover him, they won't be successful. So I think this will be a very good day for Emmanuel Sanders.
Another guy who Patrick loves and who he made some very inappropriate comments to our mother about last weekend while celebrating, Spencer Ware's great performance. Spencer Ware did return to practice on Thursday. He was able to turn in a full session. It looks like all signs are pointing to Charles being out of commission this week, which means Ware is in line for another big game, even though it is a tougher matchup. He has some serious RB1 upside.
Yeah, I think he's locked and loaded as a top 10 running back start.
Also on the Chiefs, Macklin was held out of practice today, but all reports are that it was not injury related, which means he should be good to go. But
some heartbreak again?
Yeah. He and T.Y. Hilton both very invested in the Paris and Nicole feud.
Or maybe they're just disappointed by the results of America's Got Talent last night because they think Brian Justin Crum got robbed and they had to sit out practice today to cry about it.
Can you tell us a little more about Brian Justin Crum?
I will. He should be the frickin' winner of America's Got Talent, deserves a show in Vegas and $1 million because his songs moved me.
Wow. Cool. Beautiful, beautiful words. A guy that I liked a lot as a preseason potential sleeper, Marcus Wheaton, did return to practice, turned in a full practice today. He looks to be back in action as a WR2. Well, I'm getting ready for some crickets.
This is the problem with having the soundboard in Corey's line of sight, is he knows what's coming now.
Well, we saw Big Ben, even though we like to poo-poo him during the preseason, He looked good week one. He's going to be airing it out. And as the number two target opposite a guy who I think we're all familiar with, Eli Rogers, and Antonio Brown, I think Wheaton's going to have a lot of value.
Yeah, agreed. When he's healthy, he'll be good.
Patrick literally just poo-pooed my idea. And finally, the Cards defensive coordinator has indicated that they don't plan on having Patrick Peterson cover Mike Evans in all defensive sets this weekend. The Bucs are also probably going to be trying to set up some offensive schemes where Mike Evans is not always lined up against Peterson. I don't think that this is the best matchup, but Mike Evans' owners should be comfortable or at least pleased to know that the Bucs are trying to come up with a game plan where their WR1 is not facing a lockdown corner the entire game.
Well, you've got to start Mike Evans, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that in terms of what we discussed earlier about trying to get too cute too early in the season, this is one of those matchups where a lot of folks are going to think, I'm going to bench my stud Mike Evans for
Tyrell Williams.
Yeah, for an Allen Hurns type player. And no knock on Allen Hurns, but don't get too cute here. Mike Evans is the guy who you drafted to be in your starting roster. Keep him in there until we see enough from the Cardinals defense that made Jimmy Garoppolo look like a decent quarterback last weekend to actually make some of those gut reactions.
Great points, yeah, as always. All right, moving into week two, I do want to talk about a few guys that you should feel comfortable starting, a few guys who you might consider sitting. I like to call the people that you should sit duds and the people that you should start studs. So let's try out this new segment called Studs and Duds.
Studs
and Duds.
We'll start at the quarterback position. Do you know which defense gave up the least fantasy points to the quarterback in week one?
The Dolphins. 49ers.
The 49ers. And so guess who has the daunting task of playing the Niners this week?
Cameron Newton.
Cameron Newton. Obvious bench. Don't start him in anything but a 32-team league. Just kidding. That would be an example of being too cute, as Corey said. But two starts, we've already talked about Russell Wilson being fine. And Eli Manning against the Saints, who just got torched by Derek Carr. Eli is home to the Saints. And with Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham, and a slightly healthier than anticipated Victor Cruz, the sky's the limit for Eli Manning this week. Do you disagree or agree, or any other quarterbacks you're shying away from or liking?
I actually have to agree on Eli. I was high on him heading into this season, and week one really proved that my optimism wasn't for naught. Heading against the Saints, whose secondary looked pitiful, I think that Eli is going to keep up his success.
Yeah, it's funny to me that he, you know, people consistently rank him outside the top 10 when they're looking at the whole season, but he was one of the top three quarterbacks in most formats, top four quarterbacks in most formats last week, and now he's expected to be the number two quarterback, at least on Roto-World. Just kind of funny to me. I feel like he's like not a sexy name, but he might end up being one of the top five quarterbacks this year.
And it's a matchup call why he's number two, but not every quarterback when they're facing the Saints is going to be ranked number two, right? I mean,
yeah.
The fact that in a good matchup, Eli Manning is like a consensus number two best quarterback start of the weekend means that he's better than where we drafted him at number 10 or 11 overall.
Yeah.
Some tight ends. Dennis Pitta, if you're in a deep league, is playing the Cleveland Browns this week. They were top 10 against the tight end in terms of generosity to the tight end position. And there's not a lot else going on for Cleveland, so or for the Ravens. So if you're desperate, and Lord knows a lot of us are, maybe if you lost Zach Ertz and guys like Eric Ebron are already owned, try out Dennis Pitta as just a dart throw.
What do you think about, so I don't disagree necessarily, there are two other options that are available in many leagues. One is C.J. Uzomo from the Cincinnati Bengals, who was, 59 yards, Uzomo. There's some reports that Kraft is going to be more involved in the game, but you can't dispute his line from last week. 59 yards from a guy who is owned in 7% of Yahoo leagues is definitely somebody worth a look. But what do you think, given increased competition next week and playing Pittsburgh? at Pittsburgh.
I mean, if you're desperate, that's a good name to know just because he did put up a decent stat line in week one. But if your only two options are Pitta and Uzuma, I'd take Pitta. I mean, in either case, I wouldn't be excited at all.
Okay, what about Tammy?
Tammy!
The movie. No, but Tammy had, I think, the same amount of targets as Sanu and Julio. He had 51 yards, and he's playing Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
No, he could also be okay. I mean, it's getting, at that point, if you had someone like Clive Walford or Jared Cook or Zach Miller last week and you're very disappointed, justifiably, I might give Dennis Pitta a look. I would not drop any of those three names for Tammy or Uzuma. So it's more like if you're in a 16-team league and you have Zach Ertz and he's out, or you have Gronk and he sits, then those are good names to know because they're going to be available. And those, like, they might literally be your only option.
But you think that they're, you think Pitta is a better option than Uzuma and Tammy?
Well, the Raiders did a nice job of locking down the tight end position last week. You know, there was a lot of hype about Kobe Fleener. He did not deliver week one. The Raiders have a solid linebacking core. Their secondary is a little more questionable, but I think that, you know, this is going to be a better matchup for Sanu and Julio than for Tammy. So I'm not excited about Tammy heading into this weekend.
Well, neither is Rotten Tomatoes. Other tight end starts, you just mentioned Kobe Fleener. I think you got to stick with him. This is fairly obvious because you probably drafted him as the fifth or sixth tight end off the board. After his one catch game one, you're upset. But against the Giants this week, you got to give him another try. If he has one catch again, then we need to really hit the panic button. But for now, let's just hope it's a fluke. I mean, I remember, I think, in one of my first years of doing fantasy, Deion Branch was supposed to be a number one wide receiver and laid a complete goose egg week one, just zero catches for 0 yards. So sometimes, as Forrest Gump would say, shit happens. And one maybe surprising star is Jason Witten. He's someone I was not high on at all in the preseason just because I think he's a big name with nothing behind it at this point in his career. But, man, Dak Prescott looked his way a lot. And Prescott was quoted today as saying that he's not going to force feed the ball to Dez Bryant. You know, if he doesn't feel comfortable throwing the deep ball and Witten is there and moving the chains, which he seemed to do a lot in week one, why not keep going to Witten? He does have good hands, even if he's not going to, you know, break away for an 80-yard touchdown. So
there's only one player in all of football with more targets than Jason Witten last week, and that was A-Rob.
Wow. That's
crazy.
There you go. That's a deep stat Patrick, they call him. Moving on to some running backs.
Heard of it.
T.J. Yeldon could be another good start just because he's a volume-based play here at the Chargers. The Chargers gave up the seventh most fantasy points to running backs in week one, admittedly a small sample size and going against Spencer Ware. But still, Chris Ivory is pretty much certain to be out. He was released from the hospital also with a case of heartbreak, I believe, but will not play this week. So Yeldon makes for a decent, maybe low-end RB2, maybe 20 carries for 60 yards and hopefully finds the end zone again. Spencer Ware is a good start. And then I think Thomas Rawls should be, you know, just when you think it's safe to get back in the water. They're saying that he's our man. Our team is meant to have Rawls as the lead back. So hopefully he gets the majority of touches. I'm not super confident in this, but I mean, I think if you have Christian Michael and Thomas Rawls, you got to start Rawls this week.
Yeah.
Just based on coach speak. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wide receivers, Corey and I briefly talked about Jordan Matthews probably being a good start, especially with Ertz out at the crappy Bears on Monday night. And then here's sort of a question mark that maybe you guys can help me out with. The Chargers wide receivers. You may have heard Keenan Allen got a big old boo-boo and is out for the year. So Travis Benjamin looks to be the nominal number one wide receiver, and Tyrell Williams looks to be the nominal number two. I feel like Benjamin is a decent WR2 start, and Williams is sort of a dart throw flex option. Are you guys starting him in any league, and is this just chasing fool's gold?
I have Travis Benjamin in, I think, three of my six leagues. He was one of my late-round flyers.
Nice.
As much as I love Keenan Allen, and I don't root for injuries in the NFL unless you're on my opponent's team.
Or the Seahawks.
Yeah. I was a little sheepishly excited to see that Travis Benjamin was going to have an opportunity to have a bigger role in this offense. I did notice that the Chargers really shied away from the passing game after Keenan Allen went down, and I think that kind of threw their entire offense in a funk and allowed the Chiefs to come back in pretty miraculous fashion. I think that we
with
see
Patrick's Alex Smith, Corey.
I think we see a step back from that, and I think we see a little bit more of a pass-happy offense this week. I'm hoping for Travis Benjamin to do big things. I still think it's probably too early to plug him in, even as a flex option, unless you're in a 12-plus team league. You may very well be kicking yourself on Monday morning when Benjamin has 100 yards and a touchdown, but I think you should feel confident in having that player on your bench and knowing that week three you can plug them in.
I'm going to just throw out a flyer that I want you to mark my words about, and that's the rise of the N-Man, Dontrell N-Man. I don't understand why the fantasy community has formed a consensus around Tyrell Williams as being the immediate beneficiary of Keenan Allen's absence. Yes, he had more yards than him last week, but Corey, what was his long? Corey, what was his long? I believe he had two catches for 71 yards, and that's great. I mean, Dontrell N-Man didn't have a huge game last week, but this is his third season. He has a rapport with Phillip Rivers. He put up some monster games last season, particularly toward the end of the season. He's somebody who has some real-world experience. I don't understand where the undrafted Tyrell Williams comes into play when a trusty option like Dontrell N-Man is also on the squad. So all the hype is around Tyrell. I wouldn't feel comfortable starting him right now. I would be starting Benjamin because if I was starting him already, because his value probably doesn't change much. It goes up a little bit, but if I was already starting him, there's no reason to not start him now. But I think that I wouldn't start Tyrell, and I'd keep an eye on Inman. If you're in a league where it's super deep and there's not a lot of talent on the wire, I might speculate and grab him.
The thing that concerns me about Travis Benjamin's value, though, is the usage that he's having with the San Diego Chargers. When he was on the Browns, he was kind of the speedster and the deep threat. Last week, we saw him haul in 7 of his 8 targets, which if he did that last year, would probably have been good for 280 yards and 6 touchdowns. But with the way that they've used him on these short intermediate routes, his 7 catches were only good for 32 yards with a long of 8 yards. I like the usage. I like the volume, but I still think we need to see a little bit more of how the Chargers plan on using him, even in this post Keenan Allen world that we're living in now.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. Corey is very glad that his fellow Cal alum Keenan Allen is out for the year with a terrible injury, and Patrick is starting Dontrell N-Man over Antonio Brown.
Actually, over Russell Wilson, too. I put him in my quarterback spot.
What? Like Joe Webb? Let me ask you one more sit-start question, because you guys are from the Bay Area, I believe. Torrey Smith and Jeremy Curley. Can you start any receiving option on the 49ers? My gut is neither belong in starting lineups, but if you had to start someone, it'd be Curley. But I don't think he's a trustworthy start yet.
No. Hell no.
Nice. I'm actually starting Jeremy Curley in my flex in Kung Fu.
It's a 14-team league.
Yeah, and it's a matchup I'm probably not supposed to win. I probably have a gimpy Gronk.
But you thrive on that underdog mentality.
I do, and that inspires my players. But I think Curley...
Patrick gives really good halftime speeches to his fantasy team.
It's difficult to find an analogy to what you could expect from him. They're playing the Panthers. The Broncos played the Panthers last Thursday night. So it's difficult to think, like, who is the Curley analog on the Broncos? And I don't really think there is one.
Yeah.
But he's somebody that he's not a burner like Patton and Torrey Smith. So he's not someone who's going to be a deep option. He's going to be the intermediate option on a team that really has shit for tight end options. So he's sort of this interesting Swiss Army knife option that in deep, deep, deep leagues, I think is somebody who might get 7 targets against the Panthers and maybe will be the beneficiary of a lot of underneath crap when the Niners inevitably are down by 10 points in the third quarter.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, especially in PPR leagues. You know, he could easily put up 5 catches for 60 or 70 yards and have a very solid PPR day.
Yeah, absolutely. But I couldn't start Torrey Smith. I just really could. I think he's going to draw a lot of attention, particularly since the Panthers are probably going to be winning and expecting a lot of deep bombs. And what he did during week one, what he didn't do really is enough reason to keep him on the bench. He's getting dropped in most of my leagues at this point.
Yeah, I drafted him in two leagues right at the very end, just thinking, well, he's going to be the number one target, the only competent receiver. I dropped him in both leagues. I think he's done. You know, his specialty is being a deep threat, and Blaine Gabbert can't throw the ball more than 5 yards, so he's done. Put a fork in him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with deep threat receivers is they require a deep threat quarterback. We saw, you know, Joe Flacco's strength was the long ball.
Yep.
That's why he was able to support some great seasons out of Torrey Smith when he was out there. When Torrey Smith came to the Niners and Blaine Gabbert throwing him the ball, he's not going to have that same strength. The same way we saw Mike Wallace benefit so much with a deep ball passer and Ben Roethlisberger struggle once he went to the Dolphins and Tannehill couldn't throw the ball accurately more than 15 yards. Now that he's on the Ravens, even though I was down on him heading into the season, Mike Wallace is with a deep ball quarterback with Flacco. He could have some sneaky value, and I think he's someone who should certainly be owned over Torrey Smith and should probably be owned in 12-team leagues.
And you're starting Mike Wallace over Matt Forte in your flex?
I'm starting him over Cam Newton this weekend.
Well, I don't know if this gives you comfort or not. The last time Curley caught a pass for more than 35 yards was 2012. So perversely, if you're looking for a bona fide underneath option, maybe he's your guy.
2012, I don't even remember that. There was no Finding Dory yet. Mitt Romney was all the hot talk.
Well, do you guys have anything else to say about anything?
The Giants, Donald Trump?
Go ahead, I have a deep flyer.
Helen Chapman is running for city council in District 6.
Yep, vote for her. Though I'm an AP owner and an AP lookalike by many people's estimations, I think you should take a flyer if you've got the bench spot on one of his backups, probably McKinnon, but maybe the Asiata sandwich from Jack in a Box. But I think if you've got the room and you're in a deep league, I think it's worth stashing before you have to pay for him on Monday morning.
Pay for him on Monday morning because of an AP injury or because it's going to be a timeshare where both are productive?
I think there might be a committee forming soon.
And this is inside knowledge from AP himself.
I do have his helmet in my bedroom, and it's autographed. So there.
The coach has told him we want to get you fewer carries, keep you fresh for the postseason. All right, some bold predictions, some not-so-bold predictions. Good luck and week deal.
Bye.
Oh,
thanks for stopping
by. Get in, Keith.